Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, December 19th, 2020. Section A. Midland unemployment jumps to 9.3%. Odessa posts Texas' highest jobless rate for sixth straight month by Mel McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. A resurgence in COVID-19 infections in November sent unemployment climbing across the state, according to the West Texas Workforce Commission. November rates rose to in all 26 metropolitan statistical areas, the commission reported Friday. In its Midland MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, the rate jumped to 9.3% from 8.1% in October. A year ago, Midland's unemployment rate was 2.1%. Odessa's unemployment rate leaped 1.9% to 13.1% from 11.2% in October. Odessa has recorded the state's highest unemployment for six consecutive months. There shouldn't be anything shocking in this, commented Willie Taylor, chief executive officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin. He attributed the rise to rollbacks in business openings as virus infections rose. Amid the uncertainty caused by the pandemic, it doesn't surprise me to see things shift up one month and down the next. We're in an unstable time, and we're going to see that over the next few months. Although Midland's civilian labor force grew by about 900 from October to November, the number of employed Midlanders fell by approximately 800, and the number of unemployed jumped about 1,500. Midland's labor force remains 5,700 below year-ago levels, while the number of employed Midlanders is down by 13,000, and the number of unemployed Midlanders is up about 7,400. Taylor said the number of unemployment insurance claims filed at his offices peaked in March and April and have now fallen to about 300 a month. That's good to see, he said, but he cautioned that those benefits expire at the end of the month and could impact the labor market. Also having an impact is a vote by the three workforce commissioners last month to reinstate job search requirements for those filing unemployment claims. Taylor said his office is doing its best to assist job seekers by beefing up virtual job fairs, among other services. The good news is we have training resources and child care dollars for those in need of child care assistance, he said. We have resources and we continue to ask people to call the workforce centers, call the community colleges, and look at what training is available. Midland added non-farm jobs from October to November for a count of 102,200. A little bit below the 115,500 counted last November. The dominant industrial sector, mining, logging, and construction, was unchanged from October to November. Transportation, trade, and utilities, the second largest sector, added 700 jobs, followed by financial activities and government sectors. The professional land and business services sector and leisure and hospitality sector were the only two to lose jobs. For the 12 months from November 2019 to November 2020, trade, transportation, utilities lost the most jobs after mining, logging, and construction. Next was leisure and hospitality. Other services lost 800 jobs while manufacturing was down 300. Education and health services lost 200 while the information sector and financial sector each lost 100. The only sectors to gain jobs over the 12 months were the government sector, up 300, and the business and professional sector, with 100 new jobs. Statewide, the unemployment rate rose to 8.1% from 6.9% in October. The state added 65,800 jobs over the month, the seventh consecutive month of job growth. Amarillo continued to report the state's lowest unemployment rate of 5.4, followed by College Station at 5.6 and Austin Round Rock at 5.9. Oil prices post seventh weekly gain, close above $49. Amela McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. The arrival of COVID-19 vaccinations are not just a shot in the arm of the recipients, but to oil markets as well. Oil prices posted their seventh weekly gain as the rollout of the vaccination and ongoing negotiations in Washington on a relief package added to the optimism about the future of oil demand. WTI on the New York Exchange closed above the $49 level, gaining 74 cents to end the week at $49.10 per barrel. Prices moved higher each trading day this week and are now at their highest level since March. The posted price closed at $45.50 per barrel. Natural gas ended the week slightly higher, gaining 6.4 cents Friday to close at $2.70, up from $2.68. Higher oil prices reflect growing optimism about the COVID-19 vaccine and relief package negotiations, which will drive increased economic activity and oil consumption. Ed Longenier, president of the State Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email, "These factors, along with improving market conditions, should accelerate our nation's recovery, which could be negatively impacted by further shutdowns, increased regulations, or restrictions targeting the oil and gas industry under the new administration." Grant Swartzwelder, owner and president of OTA Compression, told the reporter, "It's great to see oil prices climb, but as an oil field service company, we need them to stay at that level for a while. Stability will motivate producers to increase activity and provide us with more work. We have seen an increase lately, but we have a long way to go to get back to even a part of where we were." Bloomberg reported that oil prices rallied 5% this week. Prices were boosted by talks on a relief package making some headway, with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell saying he's even more optimistic now that an agreement is near. Recent progress in rolling out a COVID-19 vaccine also has buoyed the outlook for consumption. "It's all about the return to pre-pandemic life, and we're getting there. You have major breakthroughs on the vaccine front, which has been very positive for the demand recovery outlook." People are also paying close attention to the overall trajectory of the U.S. dollar. Underlying the climb in headline crude prices, premiums on near-dated contracts relative to the later ones are indicating improving demand. The bullish pattern known as backwardation has strengthened at the back end of oil's forward curve. WTI's nearest December contract trades more than $1 a barrel higher than that for December 2022, compared to trading at a discount less than a month before. Yet there are signs the market's rally is due for a pause. Brent's nearest time spread trend ended the week at parity, compared with a premium of as much as 18 cents the week before. At the same time, premiums for real-world barrels are easing. There's great news about the arrival of vaccines, the promise they hold, and that global demand is likely to return in a big way as a result. But in the near term, there has zero effect on petroleum demand. The spreading virus and lockdowns are weighing on demand, but the hit is much smaller than earlier in the year and is likely only a speed bump to rebalancing the market. This will leave the oil market range-bound and choppy in coming weeks as vaccine enthusiasm is followed by headlines on tightened pandemic restrictions. Meanwhile, as oil prices move higher, there are concerns this might lure producers to tap capacity that's been sidelined during the pandemic. While the U.S. shale industry requires heavy reinvestment to boost output, the large amount of spare capacity could present a risk to future price gains. As has been the case for several years, a swing factor on whether oil can retain rallies or violently give them back is U.S. supply growth. This spare capacity again introduces surprise supply risk that could limit the magnitude and duration of rallies, especially if the WTI forward curve exceeds $50 per barrel. Teen charged with murder in alleged drug deal gone wrong, by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. An 18-year-old Midlander has been charged with murder after he allegedly shot and killed a man during a drug deal at a DK convenience store Monday night. Payne Stewart Reyes allegedly shot Santonio Griffin, 20, at least 9 times in the parking lot of a Midland DK on West Scarborough Drive following an argument, according to Reyes' arrest affidavit. The affidavit states the argument occurred while Griffin was purchasing marijuana from Reyes. The Midland Police Department released a sketch of the suspected shooter earlier this week. Reyes was identified from the sketch by an anonymous tipster. Reyes was pulled over Thursday in a traffic stop, at which time an ounce of marijuana was allegedly found in his vehicle and a 9mm handgun was found on his person. Reyes also had an outstanding felony warrant for theft of a firearm. There were four women with Griffin at the time he was shot and killed, according to the affidavit, which states that one of the women positively identified Reyes during a lineup. Reyes's vehicle and clothing found in his car matched the vehicle and clothing of the man who was seen at the store's surveillance footage. Griffin died at Midland Memorial Hospital late Monday night after sustaining a gunshot wound to the chest. Reyes was charged Thursday with murder and possession of a controlled substance, in addition to the earlier charge for theft of a firearm. He is currently being held at the Midland County Jail on $500,000 bond for the murder charge. MPD investigates fatal shooting, from staff reports. Midland police are investigating a shooting that took place in Northwest Midland early Friday morning. The police department responded to the 4400 block of Northcrest Drive about 4 a.m. in reference to a shooting. A 21-year-old woman had gone to her vehicle and found a man inside and in the process of stealing items. She shot the man, who was identified as a 36-year-old Jared Adron Roberts. Detectives interviewed the woman, who was released, according to MPD. No arrests have been made at this time. The investigation is ongoing. Nation's rig count continues to rise, by Mella McEwen. The nation's rig count continues its upward trend, according to the oilfield services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics company Enverus. The two reported Friday the U.S. rig count rose 8 to 346, 102 rigs more than the record low of 244 in August. Still, there are 467 fewer rigs working today than a year ago. There were 263 rigs drilling for oil, up 5, but 422 below the 685 drilling for oil last year. There were 81 rigs drilling for natural gas. Texas added 3 rigs to 158. New Mexico added 6 rigs for 66, the only producing state aside from Texas to add rigs. Wyoming was the only producing state to decline, losing 1 rig to 4. The Permian Basin gained 6 rigs to 174. The Permian was the only producing basin to add rigs. Eddy County, New Mexico, became the most active county in the Permian Basin, adding 6 rigs. Lee County followed with 32. Midland County lost 2 rigs to 20, while Martin County added 2 rigs for 16. Howard County was unchanged at 14, as was Reeves County with 11. Loving County added 1 rig for 10. Crane and Linn County saw renewed activity with 1 rig each. Gaines and Yoakum County saw drilling activity cease, each losing the 1 rig at work in their counties. Enverus rig analysis indicates the U.S. rig count is up 8% in the last month, but still down 52% year over year. Permian rig activity is up by 20% in the last month. The largest gains were in Lee County, New Mexico, and Reagan County. Pioneer Natural Resources accounts for half of the Reagan increase, adding 2 rigs for a total of 3 in the county. EOG added the most in Lee County in the last month, increasing its count there by 3 to reach 10. Looking at the DJ Basin, Enverus said there may be roughly 4,300 active permits to drill new wells in Colorado, but it doesn't appear that operators are rushing to drill those wells before the state's new setback rules take effect January 15th. On that date, new wells will have to be at least 2,000 feet from occupied structures, and any undrilled permits will have to be resubmitted under the new rules. All 7 DJ rigs currently running are in rural Weld County. 311 Ministries finds Christmas gifts for more than 2,000 children. 300 local families await sponsorships, by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Christmas is coming early this year for about 2,300 children in Midland and Greenwood who will receive toys, outfits, and holiday meals beginning today at 311 Ministries. The children are MISD or Greenwood ISD students living below the poverty level. Ministry's Executive Director Paris Wilbank said. The nonprofit has connected children with sponsors each year for the holidays since 2013. With the coronavirus pandemic creating a strain on many families' resources, Wilbank said they're sponsoring at least 100 more children this year than in 2019. A lot of families we received this year are families who have never asked for help before, families who have gone through job losses or are struggling with COVID overall. But even before the COVID-19 downturn, 50% of MISD students were living below the poverty level. 311 Ministries posts families in need of sponsorships on their Facebook page, where residents can then choose a family they want to shop for. Children in the program typically receive toys, an outfit, a pair of shoes, a blanket, hygiene products, and a Christmas meal. There's also the option to choose a financial sponsorship, which ranges from about $120 to $150, depending on the size of the family. With this option, staff from 311 Ministries shop for the selected children. Wilbank said there are about 300 families who are waiting for sponsorships. Anyone wanting to help those families would need to choose the financial sponsorship option because of time limitations, she said. There's only a week until Christmas. The ministry will begin distributing gifts to families in their program today. Wilbank said it was remarkable that the community still sponsored over 2,000 children despite the economic downturn Midland has been facing for the last 9 months. It never ceases to amaze us. They come through even in the worst times. More information about donating to 311 Ministries can be found on their Facebook page, Midland County Angels Christmas in the Village. Donations can also be made by texting 311-CHRISTMAS to 50155. American Airlines threatens Southwest's lead at Midland International Airport. From staff reports. There wasn't much month-to-month improvement to the Midland International Airport report in November. The percentage difference in people boarding an airline compared to the same month during the previous year fell below 50%, which was an improvement compared to the 50.9% decline in September and the 50.5% in October. The year-over-year drop in passengers topped 80% in the spring. Southwest Airlines had the most passengers in October, but its share dropped to 38.3%. compared to 34.7% for American Airlines. In October, Southwest Airlines' percentage was 43.1%. The city also reported declines in gallons of fuel sold and parking revenues compared to November 2019. The parking revenue decline in October was 50.9%. Obituaries and death notices. Funeral services for Becky Sue Side Solly, 62 of Gainesville, are scheduled for 5 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th, at George J. Carroll & Son Funeral Home. The family will receive friends following the service. Committal services at Dallas-Fort Worth National Cemetery will take place at a later date. Memorial contributions may be made to Hillcrest Church of Christ. You may sign the online register at www.geojcarroll.com. On Monday, December 14th, Betty Marie Johnson peacefully passed away at the age of 85, surrounded by her family. Public viewing will be held from 4 to 9 p.m. Sunday, December 20th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. The family will not be present during those hours due to COVID-19. The service will be a private family service held on Monday, December 21st. Live streaming of the service will be available at 12 o'clock p.m. at livestream.com/MPW. Imaterio Nieta Ortega, 86, of Midland, passed away on December 16th, surrounded by his family. A rosary will be held on Sunday, December 20th at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. The funeral service will be held on Monday, December 21st at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe in Midland, followed by burial in Serenity Gardens in Midland. Funeral services is under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Fred Edward Richardson departed this life on December 5th. The family will receive visitors from 11 to 2 p.m. Tuesday, December 22nd at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral services will follow the family visitation at 2 p.m. at the funeral home. burial with military honors will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, December 23rd at Central Texas State Veterans Cemetery in Killeen. Nancy Ruth Ritz, 91, went to be with our Lord on Friday, December 11th. If you wish to remember Nancy, please give to Manor Park Endowment Fund in Midland in Nancy's name. Arrangements are under the direction of Riley Pickling Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory. Jasper William Hughes, 11, passed away December 12th. Memorial service will be held at a later date. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Howard Adams, born April 27th, 1936 in Seguin, departed this life on Saturday, December 12th. Services will be held on Tuesday, December 22nd, located at Fairview Cemetery on Avenue A. Marlene Rogers, 80, of Odessa, passed away on December 17th in Odessa. There are no services scheduled at this time. Thomas Hyde passed away December 17th. Services will be held at a later date at the Dallas-Fort Worth National Cemetery.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, December 19th, 2020. Section A. ERs Still Open for Business in Odessa by Federico Martinez. In an odd twist, concerns about COVID-19 may be discouraging Odessa residents from seeking treatment for emergency health care. David Graham, Emergency Department Director for Medical Center Health Systems, said during a Friday news conference. For example, pre-pandemic, the hospital was averaging 180 emergency visits per day, MCHS officials noted. Since March, that number has plunged to as little as 100 people per day. There's been a lot of confusion in the community, Graham said. Every day I'm getting phone calls and even text messages from people asking if the emergency room is open. The answer is yes, we're open 24/7. Officials at Odessa Regional Medical Center confirmed their emergency room is also open, but declined to provide any further details. Part of the confusion is people hear that hospitals are filled with COVID-19 patients and how overworked hospital staff are, Graham explained. While that is true, emergency rooms are separate entities that have their own staff. A lot of people tell me, well, we know how overwhelmed hospitals are, Graham said. No, people shouldn't avoid us thinking that they're doing us a favor. We don't want people to avoid us if they have a serious problem. If someone falls down and has hip pain or feels tightness in their chest, they need to get checked out. There's no reason to avoid us. We're not overwhelmed in the ER. The current estimated waiting period from when someone walks through the door is less than 10 minutes, ER staff noted during the news conference. An extra 7 beds have been added in the emergency department in order to see patients quicker and provide better social distancing. Graham said strict safety measures are in place to prevent visitors from being exposed to the coronavirus. Everyone is screened before they enter the emergency room and placed in private rooms, Graham said. Masks are provided to all visitors and very stringent cleaning and disinfectant measures are followed, he added. MCHS also provides care that other smaller emergency facilities don't offer. We offer monoclonal antibody treatments, which have proven effective in people with mild cases of COVID, Graham said. In order to prevent overcrowding and proper social distancing, only the adult seeking emergency services is allowed into the hospital, Graham said. They can only be accompanied inside by another adult if it's medically or legally necessary. Young children can be accompanied by one adult. If someone brings a guest to help them fill out paperwork information, that guest must wait outside the emergency room, and ER staff will go outside or call that person to help answer patient information, Graham said. Odessa man dies in five-vehicle collision near Stanton. A 37-year-old Odessa man died after he was reportedly involved in a five-vehicle collision in Martin County. The reported fatal collision happened around 9:01 p.m. Wednesday on I-20 near Stanton, a Texas Department of Public Safety press release detailed. Jose A. Sienz, 37, of Odessa, was reportedly driving a 2012 Kenworth truck trailer towing a semi-trailer, while Jafar S. Eskander, 26, of Riverdale, Maryland, was driving a 2019 Volvo truck tractor towing a semi-trailer with his passenger, 54-year-old Salim E. Shafia of Riverdale, Maryland. Jorge Torres, 21, of Odessa, was driving with 19-year-old Aldo Torres of Odessa and 28-year-old Justin T. Alvarado of Odessa in a 2020 Isuzu box truck, the press release stated. Marco A. Varela Martinez, 35, of Garland, was driving a 2016 GMC Sierra, towing a utility trailer with 31-year-old Jesus A. Varela Martinez of Garland, 4-year-old Leo Varela Martinez of Garland, 8-year-old Amy Varela Martinez of Garland, and 28-year-old Alondra Estrada of Garland. Tony M. Stewart, 51, of Dallas, was driving a 2020 Freightliner truck tractor towing a semi-trailer, the press release stated. The Kenworth was reportedly traveling west on I-20. Traffic was congested and had come to a stop. The Kenworth reportedly failed to control its speed and struck the rear of the Volvo truck tractor, which caused a chain reaction of collisions. The Volvo truck tractor was pushed into the rear of the Isuzu box truck, and it also collided with the GMC Sierra, the press release detailed. The Isuzu box truck was also pushed into the rear of the Freightliner truck tractor. Sienz was pronounced dead at the scene, and it was unknown if he was wearing a seatbelt, the press release stated. Eskander and Shafia were each transported to the Martin County Hospital in Stanton with non-incapacitating injuries. Jorge Torres and Alvarado were each reportedly transported to University Medical Center in Lubbock with incapacitating injuries, while Aldo Torres was not injured. The four members of the Varela Martinez family were each transported to the Martin County Hospital in Stanton with non-incapacitating injuries, the press release stated. Stewart was not injured. The 11 survivors were all reportedly wearing their seatbelts. Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, December 20th, 2020. Section A. Mr. Conaway leaves Washington. Hometown favorite of both Odessa and Midland retires. By Laura Dennis. Joking immediately that there was no red carpet in the elevator for his final farewell interview, U.S. Representative Mike Conaway goes out as he came in, with good humor, kindness, and grace. As the eight-term Republican prepares to retire at year's end, he reflected on his time as the District 11 U.S. Representative and his plans for the future, all the while being hailed with words not always used to describe successful politicians in our time: humble, moral, consequential, character, class. Conaway, a native Texan, grew up in Odessa and graduated from Permian High School in 1966 after playing on Permian's first state championship football team. He went on to earn a bachelor's degree in accounting from Texas A&M University Commerce in 1970 and then served in the Army at Fort Hood. When he returned to the Permian Basin, he landed with Price Waterhouse and settled in Midland, where he would work with another hometown favorite, former President George W. Bush, as chief financial officer for Bush Exploration. Conaway, like Bush, is one of the very few who are hailed as hometown heroes by both Odessa and Midland. Many, like Conaway's lifelong friend Phil Fouch, said it took someone like Conaway to successfully run for what was a newly formed District 11 all those years ago. Conaway won the seat in what was then a new district of 29 counties in West Texas, beating out a number of challengers to represent a sprawling district with ties to oil and gas, as well as agriculture. Conaway sailed to easy victories during the times he had an opponent since that first win in 2004. He has remained popular with constituents during his tenure and was able to bridge the occasionally acrimonious gap between Odessa and Midland. Fauch recalls the phone ringing when Conaway made the decision to run for Congress. "I started to receive calls from people in Odessa questioning a CPA from Midland who was running for Congress, the classic Odessa-Midland issue," Fauch said. "I told everyone who called Mike was raised in Odessa and lives in Midland. Mike will represent all of his district, not just Midland or Odessa. The whole crazy big District 11 has been represented like no other." Fauch called Conaway the most moral person I have ever known. Their friendship goes back years, including as part of the first state championship team at Permian High School in 1965. Fauch is proud of his friend's service. "He has been my friend for 60 years, and I could not have been more proud of him. He has left a legacy of listening, action, kindness, and doing the right thing for District 11, Texas, and the USA," Fauch said. "He has made Odessa and West Texas so proud, but he still talks too fast. And watching him prepare his English muffin for breakfast with peanut butter and honey is like building the first computer. Very complicated, but fun to watch." Fauch also bragged about the fantastic staff that Conaway has. But no one is prouder of that staff than Conaway himself. In fact, he gives them all the credit for his time as a congressman. He said his 6 district offices are filled with staff members who love people, and it shows. "There are hundreds of stories where someone in this district's lives are just a little less difficult due to efforts by my team. I'm proud of that," he said. "I can keep good people to take care of folks in the district." When talking about his coming retirement, he was suddenly a bit wistful, but joked that he will find something to do, as his wife won't want him hanging around the house all day. The outcome of the presidential election, which is still up in the air during this farewell interview, made him feel a bit like he was giving up when there was still a fight. When he announced his retirement in August 2019, the economy was going like gangbusters, and Trump was headed to a second term. And then COVID hit and oil crashed. "I have never quit in the middle of a fight, ever. I don't want to feel I am letting the people down," he said. His successor, August Pfluger, Conaway said, will do fine for the people of District 11. Pfluger had high praise for Conaway. "Mike Conaway served with character, class, and distinction. He stood up for the oil and gas industry, farmers and ranchers, and our military," he said via email. "Most importantly, he is a man of faith, and he carried himself with exceptional integrity. I am proud to have been his constituent and grateful for he and Suzanne's service to this country." Pfluger joins a House still controlled by the Democrats. But Conaway said the gains the GOP made this election in the House are all owed to the coattails of President Trump. Biden had 0 coattails for the Dems in the House. He supported the president challenging areas where there were alleged voting irregularities. He said voters turn out because they expect the process to be fair and conducted properly. "We can't have that happening, and I don't know if there is enough fraud to change it. I know the hard left is criticizing Trump for not conceding, but he is right to pursue the cases." Conaway also said the coming COVID vaccine is thanks to the work of the Trump administration. "Operation Warp Speed, take the personality of Trump aside, this will go down in history as one of the most amazing federal government accomplishments ever. It's stunning what all these guys have done to make this work." Conaway said a Biden administration will change the name of the project and some of the faces involved, and that to the victor goes the spoils, but that it was the Trump administration that pushed the vaccine through so quickly. On Friday, Conaway posted on Facebook that he had just taken the virus vaccine. Conaway is the ranking member of the House Committee on Agriculture and also serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He is a deputy Republican whip, a position he has held since the 112th Congress. Like most in political circles, he is waiting to see how the Senate runoff races in Georgia play out and warns that in Georgia, voters can live there for as little as 30 days and get to vote. They, the Democrats, are flooding those zones, and someone is paying for that. The Dems will leave no stone unturned to buy this election. Conaway has been front and center often during his time in D.C. He's proud of his work on the Farm Bill of 2018 and his work on the Armed Services Committee. His work on Intel is also something he is proud of. The biggest was pushing the Department of Defense to audit and some things that due to Intel, I can't tell you. It also fell to Conaway to lead the probe into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election, a tough position for any member of the president's own party. Conaway talks glowingly of his staff and the hard work they have put in over the last 16 years. It's such a positive experience to be a member of Congress. I love it. I love it right now, this second. He said he doesn't have a worst experience, although he pointed to June 2017 when a gunman opened fire on Republican lawmakers during a batting practice in Alexandria, Virginia, as the darkest experience. Conaway was on first base. House GOP Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana was at second base, fielding baseballs, and Representative Trent Kelly, Republican Mississippi, was on third base during the standard batting practice when the shooting began. The gunman was killed and several others were injured. The ups and downs of a political job haven't dampened his positive attitude, and he said recent months, despite the pandemic, have been spent on a farewell tour of his sprawling district. Sometimes in person and sometimes virtually, Conaway said he has struggled to convey how thankful he is for the opportunity to serve. It's tough, showing gratitude and appreciation. There aren't enough words, he said. This job is stunningly important. I'm not important, but the job is important. He said he went into the service with eyes wide open and that he has missed family time, which he hopes to make up now. I did it knowingly, and it's one of those sacrifices you make because I love the job and it is important enough to make that choice. He's proud of having probably more town halls than any other member of Congress and said he hopes Washington hasn't changed him. Suzanne's goal was to keep my head the same size and not let me get caught up in how other folks want to tell you how great you are, he said. She reins that in and tells me, take out the trash, big time. He said he has always respected the job and that it hurts him when someone in Congress doesn't live up to what the job should be. We have a poor reputation sometimes among the people, and that hurts me. It is a worthy institution enshrined in our Constitution, and when members bring disrespect or cause people to think less of the body as a whole, it hurts me. He said he thinks he is the same guy who headed to D.C. 16 years ago, but also acknowledges that he is not the exact same guy. I always think of what can I do better, and I don't take compliments well. Would he do it all over again? In a heartbeat, he quickly answered. I wouldn't be leaving now if Father Time and the opportunity to lead and be a leader had not evaporated. But he's optimistic about the future and says 2022 will see the GOP take the House back. His work in D.C., despite his dislike for compliments, earns high praise from those in his district. Mike Conaway is remarkable because he is one of the few members of Congress who has been consequential in office, State Senator, State Representative Brooks Landgraf said. But what sets him apart from others is that he was able to do all of that while keeping his faith in Christ and his relationship with his family at the center of his life. All Americans should be so lucky to have a congressman like Mike Conaway. Congressman Mike Conaway has been a tremendous advocate for Odessa and our area. As a native, this community is special to the congressman, and he never forgot that during his 16-year tenure, He was always available, and his staff was proactive in keeping us informed on issues of importance. I feel like we've had an open-door policy with Congressman Conaway, and we are proud of how he's represented our community. We wish him well on a very much-deserved retirement and want to remind him that Odessa will always be home. Renee Henderson Earls, Odessa Chamber CEO. Mike was one of those unique hybrid individuals that both Odessa and Midland seemed to call their own. He grew up in Odessa playing football for Permian and had a very successful accounting career in Midland. Win, win. He always worked for our communities with class and high moral character, which in today's politics is hard to find. He and his wonderful wife, Suzanne, were always approachable, and even though he was a tenured congressman, Mike always knew that Odessa, Midland, and all of West Texas is where he grew up and worked, and he did his best to always make us proud. He will be missed by us all, but we are happy that he and Suzanne get to enjoy their next chapter in life. I personally want to thank him for his service and sacrifice to the Permian Basin. D. Kirk Edwards, CEO of Latigo Petroleum. Mike Conaway is remarkable because he is one of the few members of Congress who has been consequential in office, passing a complex farm bill while protecting American interests on the Intelligence Committee. But even more rare is that Congressman Conaway has been consequential while staying firmly in tune with his constituents and our West Texas values. But what sets him apart from others is that he was able to do all of that while keeping his faith in Christ and his relationship with his family at the center of his life. All Americans should be so lucky to have a congressman like Mike Conaway. Brooks Landgraf, District 81 State Representative. Thank you, Chairman Conaway. By Congressman Mike Conaway's staff. Mr. Chairman, in preparing for you to leave office, we have had the opportunity to reflect on the immense impact of your public service. We have seen and spoken to Americans from all walks of life, the residents of District 11, farmers and ranchers, service members and others, whose lives were made better by your time in Congress. But perhaps the group who has benefited the most from your time in office was us, the members of your staff, who have had the great privilege of calling you our boss. The stories we will tell about our time working for you will be of a man who regarded his office with reverence and undertook his service with joy. We will look back on your devotion to West Texas and the welfare of your constituents, your diligent work to be better prepared each day, and how you grappled with every difficult decision that crossed your desk. It has been an honor to witness firsthand your selflessness after hard-fought victories, your optimism in the wrenching defeats, your grace under pressure, and your unending reserve of humor and forgiveness. But perhaps most of all, we will remember your kindness and decency and how you treated those around you with respect, and the House of Representatives with dignity. For each of us, these stories are unique, but for all of us, they form a portrait of how one should serve others and be a good steward of God's varied grace. As you leave the halls of Congress, your legacy will endure within all of us, including the countless constituents and Americans who you have impacted and inspired throughout your time in office. Thank you for letting us be one small part of it. Sincerely, Team Conaway. Local news roundup. Free COVID-19 testing and flu shots. The City of Odessa, in partnership with Odessa Regional Medical Center, are offering free COVID-19 testing and free flu shots to City of Odessa and Ector County residents. Free mobile COVID testing has been scheduled starting at 10 a.m. at the following dates and locations. Lining up starts at 8:30 a.m. Monday, Central Park. Tuesday, Buddy West Elementary. December 28th, Sherwood Park. December 30th, UTPB Park. Only 200 tests will be available at each event for City of Odessa and Ector County residents. It's first come, first served. Residents must show proof of residency and provide good contact information, phone number, and email in order to get results. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. Along with the free mobile COVID-19 testing events, participating MCH and ORMC community clinics will be offering daily free COVID-19 testing and flu shots. Daily drive-through testing at Floyd Gwynn Park will also be available from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday and is open to anyone over age 5, not limited to city or county residents. The tests are free to everyone, but those who have insurance are asked to please present their insurance card. To pre-register for tests, anyone can go to www.doxhealthtesting.com or call 267-362-5207. ORMC will continue to offer free COVID-19 testing and flu shots through mobile testing events and at its ORMC Community Health Center through the end of the year or until the supplies run out. Appointments preferred. For more information, call ORMC at 582-8549. Visit https://tx-odessa.civicplus.com/341/covid-19-testing. New Year's Eve event. Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center has scheduled New Year's Eve event December 31st. The following packages are available. The Midnight Hour Dine, Dance, and Sleep Package. Accommodations for two. Welcome Champagne, an Epicurean three-course dinner experience in Beryl and Derrick. Brunch for two on New Year's Day. Live music. Midnight Toast, New Year's Eve Party Props for $299 plus tax. To book, visit www.marriott.com/MAFMC. Pop the Cork Dinner and Dance Package, Epicurean three-course dinner experience in Beryl and Derrick, Midnight Champagne Toast accompanied by live music, for $79 plus tax per person. Gold Star Dance and Party Only Package, $30 per person plus tax. All drinks and meals are additional. For reservations, call 653-5803. MCH reports 168th and 169th COVID-19 related deaths. Medical Center Health System reported two more COVID-19 related deaths Friday. The first patient, an 85-year-old female, died Friday afternoon. The second patient, a 58-year-old female, also died Friday afternoon. The first patient was a resident of Ector County and was admitted to Medical Center Hospital December 17th. The second patient was a resident of Odessa and was admitted November 24th. Both patients had pre-existing conditions, and both families have been notified. Obituaries for Sunday, December 20th. Dillard August Miller. Dillard August Miller passed away Sunday, December 13th at Midland Memorial Hospital at the age of 92. He was born in Copperas Cove to Adelbert Nichols Miller and Ella Elizabeth Von Ruff Miller. He married Betty Joyce Elza in 1950. She passed away in 1985. He was preceded in death by his wife, Betty, of 35 years, his parents, and all six siblings. He is survived by his daughter, Diane, and husband, Mark Tittle of Odessa, son Danny and wife Debbie Miller of Carlsbad, three grandchildren a great-granddaughter, brother-in-law, Jesse Herbert, Sonny Elson Jr., 5 nieces and 9 nephews. Viewing will be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday, December 20th, and Monday, December 21st, at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors in Odessa. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, December 22nd, at Jal Cemetery in Jal, New Mexico, with David Poole officiating. Memorials may be given to the Betty Miller Scholastic Fund, care of JAL Club, Post Office Box 778, Jal, New Mexico, 88252. LaVon Bailey Windham. LaVon Windham, 77, passed away November 13th in Ingram. She was born December 22nd, 1942, in Hobbs, New Mexico, to James William and Margaret June Searcy Bailey. She moved to Odessa when she was 2 years old. She married John Windham in 1959 in Odessa. She is preceded in death by her parents, her husband of 59 years, Johnny Windham, and an infant daughter, Sally Rebecca Windham. Surviving her include her sons, John C. Windham and wife Monica, and Donald F. Windham, daughters Wendy Danford and husband Harold, and Sandy Camp and husband Keith, and 3 grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to St. Jude Children's Hospital in LaVon's name. There will be no services held at this time. Arrangements are under the direction and personal care of the professionals at Kerrville Funeral Home. John Harvey Maney, 74, died December 8th at home in Austin, surrounded by his family. He was born in Wichita Falls to Eldon and Mavis Maney. He is survived by his wife of 16 years, Debbie Cherry Maney, his mother-in-law, Jane Cherry of Houston, brother Olin Maney and wife, Jane of Odessa, sister Jan Benton and husband Wayne of Amarillo, brother-in-law, David Cherry and wife and daughter, sister-in-law, Trudy Maney of Raton, New Mexico, as well as many nieces, nephews, and great-nieces. He is also survived by his daughter, Emily Maney of Colorado Springs, Colorado, and daughter Ashley Hicks and husband Gage, as well as 2 grandchildren of Odessa. He is preceded in death by both his parents, Eldon and Mavis Maney of Odessa, brother Randy Maney of Bastrop, father-in-law Don Cherry of Austin, and a nephew. Johnny will be cremated and his ashes will be spread on a few of his favorite places around Texas. A memorial service will be held in 2021 to celebrate his life. In lieu of flowers, please make donations in his name to Safe Haven Equine Rescue, 4994 FM 2088, Gilmer 75644. Pedro A. Fuentes Jr. Pedro Fuentes Jr., 86, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, November 24th. He was born March 27th, 1934, to Pedro Fuentes and Ignacia Amaya. Visitation was held Sunday, December 20th, and rosary was said to Sunday at Martinez Funeral Home. Mass will be celebrated Monday, December 21st at 2 p.m., at St. Anthony's Catholic Church in Odessa. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery. He married Fidela Ramirez and they had 5 children. He is preceded in death by his parents, Pedro and Ignacia Fuentes, a daughter, Graciela Vargas, siblings Polito Fuentes, Abundio Fuentes, Eulalia Maldonado, and Severa Saenz. Surviving him are his wife Fidela, son Arturo Fuentes, daughters Irma F. Ramirez, Sandra F. Hernandez, and husband Manuel, Susan Fuentes Wilson, 2 brothers Santiago Fuentes and Rosendo Fuentes, 2 sisters Rosa Ramirez and Maria Chavez, 13 grandchildren, 25 great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. Ronnie Medford. Ronnie Medford, 73, of Abilene, passed away Friday, December 18th. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, December 21st at Howard Cemetery, Paint Creek, with Reverend Sean Miller officiating. Services are under the direction of Smith Family Funeral Homes of Haskell. Ronnie was born November 15th, 1947, in Haskell to Lula Mae Blair and Leon Medford. He married Sally Carter in 1969 in Haskell. He is survived by his wife, Sally Jean Medford of Abilene, two sons, Timothy Craig Medford of Comanche, Mark Dale Medford and wife Alicia of San Angelo, a sister, Wanda Grant, and husband, Randy of Odessa, two granddaughters, two grandsons, five great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. He is preceded in death by his father, Leon Medford, his mother, Lula Blair Medford, a daughter, Jennifer Jean Medford, and a brother, Burl Medford. Online condolences can be shared with the family at www.smithfamilyfh.com. Mary Janice Hitchcock Reeves. Mary Janice Reeves, 82, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, December 17th, in Odessa. She was born March 25th, 1938, to Jesse and Odell Hitchcock. She married Harley Donald Reeves in 1959. Preceding her in death are her husband, Harley Reeves, her parents, Jesse and Odell Hitchcock, sister, Carol Gaines, a niece and a nephew, her sister-in-law, Gay Oates, as well as a brother-in-law, Jim Reeves, and other nephews. She is survived by her children, Sherry Vance and husband, Brett, Jamie Reeves and wife, Teresa, Lori Farber and husband, Dan, brother-in-law, Wayburn Oates, 8 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Death notices. Monica Rodriguez. Monica Rodriguez, 85, of Odessa, died Thursday, December 3rd. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. December 23rd at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Los Angeles section, with Father Bush officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Jose Dutchover Rojero. Jose Dutchover Rojero, 61, of Odessa, died Thursday, December 10th. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Monday, December 21st at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. At the family's request, cremation has been opted for the alternative means for burial. Father Joseph Uecker will officiate. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Raulo Sanchez. Raul Sanchez, 53, of Odessa, died Monday, December 14th. The celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. December 23rd at Odessa Christian Faith Center with Pastor Don K. Wood officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Mark Anthony Garcia. Mark Anthony Garcia, 35, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 6th. A chapel service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Tuesday, December 22nd at Martinez Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Pastor Joe Ornelas officiating. Refugio Jimenez. Refugio Jimenez, 96, of Odessa, died Saturday, December 12th in Midland. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Tuesday, December 22nd at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Los Angeles section of Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Doris Marie Ryan McCowan. Doris Marie Ryan McCowan, 96, of Odessa, died Sunday, December 13th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson Funeral Home of Odessa. Gennaro M. Gino Orona. Gennaro M. Gino Orona, 86, of Kermit, died Monday, December 14th in Odessa. Chapel service is scheduled for 2 p.m., was held December 19th at Family Services Funeral Chapel with Pastor Blanca Polanco officiating. Arrangements by Family Services Funeral Parlor of Kermit. Rita Marquez Ramos. Rita Marquez Ramos, 86, of Midland, died Friday, December 18th. A funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. December 21st at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Josefina Palma Armendariz. Josefina Palma Armendariz, 72, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 15th. A funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. December 22nd at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial will follow immediately at American Heritage Cemetery. Craig Stephen Blaylock. Craig Stephen Blaylock, 61, of Odessa, died Saturday, December 12th. A celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Tuesday, December 22nd at Rose of Sharon Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section, with Pastor Larry Nickerson officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.